Hello, and welcome to the Self-Sufficient Hub podcast. I'm Carl from selfsufficienthub.com, and I'm here to talk about all things self-sufficiency, all things homesteading, and about how we can reduce the gap between our consumption and our production. Sustainability and food security matters. Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 388 of the Self-Sufficient Hub podcast. I hope you're all safe and well. Today, we are going to be talking about harvesting honey, collecting honey from bees, because we have collected our first ever batch of honey. We're incredibly, incredibly thrilled about it. Really, really exciting, the process, everything about it, and that's what we're going to be talking about today. Before we do, just a tiny bit of housekeeping, just to say, as most of you will be aware, we are running a little bit late here at the Self-Sufficient Hub podcast because this is 2 days late, this episode. So if you want to lean into the time-traveling weirdness, then you can think of this as Wednesday's episode, and Friday's episode will be coming out tomorrow, even though this episode is being released on the Friday. It's just been a really, well, difficult week for me and my family. We've had a few curveballs thrown our way, and we've just had to be dealing with them. It's just been a little bit weird. Also, just to mention that my September challenge has officially started, and I'll do a little update on that in the next episode. So if you're keen to follow along with that, then stay tuned for the next episode. Right, harvesting honey then. I have to say, this experience of harvesting honey has been one of the most exciting things I've ever done that falls under the category of homesteading. So, as long-term listeners will already know, I undertook a beekeeping course. I signed up for it back before the pandemic started. In 2019, I signed up for a beekeeping course. So it's been nearly 3 years between that and harvesting my first honey, which is unusual. But the pandemic put the course on hold, and then we lost some bees. In our first year beekeeping, we weren't able to harvest any honey. So this is our second year of beekeeping, like full year, and we have harvested a full super. It's been absolutely fantastic. So my bees now are living at my father and mother-in-law's, and they are super, super into it. They grow some plants. They live on a big estate where there's several farms, dairy farms and sheep farms and a deer park, and they work for that estate, and they were really, really keen to have some bees. Because, among other things, my father was worried about the pollination of some of his plants, and I'm not sure, honestly, how big a difference it will have made. I think there's probably plenty of bees in that area already, but, well, actually, I can say pretty confidently there is, because a tree has fallen down with a beehive inside it, a honey beehive inside it. There's this massive trunk that got hit by lightning several years ago, so the inside was all hollowed out, and it's come down, and they've discovered that there's a hive of bees within it, and that's not more than 200 yards from my father-in-law's house. So they definitely have bees there. And what's really great, actually, is the estate. They've harvested all the firewood up to about 3 feet either side of where the colony is, and they're just leaving that. They're leaving the colony there. They're going to move it gradually, just a couple of feet every month or so that it's not in the wrong place, but then they're going to just leave the colony be, which I think is fantastic. I think it's great. So, yeah, back to my bees then. So when we moved house, we moved my bees from our old property straight to my father-in-law's. I keep saying my father-in-law's rather than my mother and father-in-law's, because it's my father-in-law who's sort of super into the bees, so much so that he's gone and bought a bee suit, which is great. I've never had someone come out with me and do my bees with me in a bee suit before. It's really, really great. And he came out with me when we went to collect the honey. So the process, you'll hear me mention the word super quite a lot. Just a quick explanation for those of you who don't keep bees. If you imagine a beehive, I use what's called a national beehive, and that's just a type of beehive. The national is a design. I use a national, and in the national, very, very simply put, you've got two parts to the hive. So the first part is the brood box. The brood is what we call the queen's eggs and the young larvae of the bees. And that's called the brood. So you have the brood box at the bottom. And to all intents and purposes, if you took all the bees and bee stuff out, it would look the same as the super. So the brood box has got frames, wooden frames. And within those frames is the honeycomb, the wax comb that either the bees make or that we give them as a head start. But in those frames, you've got that comb that run parallel all the way across that brood box. And the queen will lay her eggs in those honeycomb. It's the same spaces that they use to store the honey. So that will happen in like a ball in the center of the brood box. And then around that, the remainder of the honeycomb is where the bees will store their honey. And I'm a novice beekeeper, so I might be using some terms a little bit loosely here. For instance, I'm not sure if honeycomb would just refer to the parts that are actually used for honey. But for a layman, it's really simple to just think of it all as a honeycomb structure right throughout, made of wax. And the center of it in the brood box is what's used for eggs and larvae, and then the outside is what's used for honey. Then what we do is we place on top of that what's called a super, which has a slightly shorter version of exactly the same thing, lots of frames filled with honeycomb. Now, in between the two, we put a queen excluder. And what that is, it's basically a mesh. And the mesh has very, very exact sized holes in it so that all the worker bees can move up and down freely. But the queen bee can't move through it. And what this means is that those upper frames, they can only be filled with honey. They can't be filled with eggs because the queen can't access it. So effectively, what we've got is a big box within which we've got our queen, lots of worker bees, all the future bees in the form of brood, and around that some of the stores and honey for the bees to live on. And then above that, we've got additional stores and honey, and eventually it will all be honey and it will be what we call capped. Now, when we say capped, what that means is if you look at the honeycomb, if it's open on the end so the bees can get in and out, they're still using it, they're still filling it up. And if it's capped, then it's got honey in if it's in that super. So we went and inspected our super a week or two ago and it was full, absolutely full of capped honey. So we were able to harvest that. And we need to be mindful, of course, that we're managing a colony of animals. So now we've taken that away, I need to make sure, and it will be very dependent on weather and everything else, but I need to make sure that my bees are now able to restock enough honey to get them through the winter. So that will probably be the topic of another podcast. But over the coming weeks and months, we'll be checking on them, making sure they've got enough to get them through the winter. And we might have to feed them back some of their honey or something else to help them get through the winter if there's not enough in there come the start of the cold weather. But we'll talk a bit more about that in depth, I think, in a few weeks' time. So we've got now our frames full of capped honey. And at this point, I'm really, really excited. But I won't lie, I'm also a little bit nervous because I'm not entirely sure how I'm going to actually get the honey out, because there's a machine called a honey extractor, which you can use. I've never used one. I couldn't tell you how to use one, but I know that simply speaking, it's like a centrifugal machine. It spins, creating centrifugal force that pulls the honey out of the frames. But I don't have one of those, and I didn't really want to buy one. They're quite expensive, and they're not necessarily, if you're at my stage of beekeeping, they're not necessarily a good idea, because you've got the expense of buying this piece of machinery, which is fairly large, and then you've got to store it for most of the year until you want it again next year. And you're only going to use it for an hour or so to extract the honey from one hive. Doesn't really, for me, make a lot of sense. And then looking down the line in 5 years' time, there's a reasonable possibility that I'll have 10 hives or however many. That would mean that any extractor that was suitable for my needs now would no longer be, and I'd want a bigger one. So it just didn't make sense for me. So I was forced to look at some more traditional, old-fashioned methods of releasing that honey and capturing it. And I don't know why, it's not really typical for me, but I hadn't done a great amount of research on it before this point, because the circles that I've moved in with regards to beekeeping, they all use honey extractors. So I was I had looked a little bit online, and I knew that there were methods of doing it. So I didn't go in thinking, well, we'll figure this out later. I knew that there were methods of doing it, but I just hadn't really steeped myself in those methods and understood them very clearly. So I was a little bit nervous at this point, but I thought, well, the first step is to harvest the honey. So let's do that. So we did that. We harvested the honey and we replaced that super with some more frames, some empty frames for the bees to fill up. And we brought it home. And one of the things that not surprised me that much, I didn't know about it, but one of the things that is quite surprising is how quickly, as soon as you've got that honey out of the hive and the smell of it is in the air, how quickly wasps turn up. And by the dozen, lots and lots and lots of wasps turn up trying to basically rob it. And so I wanted to get that honey away from the hive as soon as possible so that I didn't encourage wasps into the actual hive to start robbing in there, which is, or can be, a concern, although my colony is really, really healthy, so they could probably have dealt with it at the doorway. Anyway, got my honey, got it home, and I was really surprised by how heavy it was. It was really quite heavy. And then we looked into how we were going to separate it. And this part, actually, looking back on it, was just really lots of fun. You'll hear a lot of stories about how dirty, not dirty, but how difficult it is to keep things clean, because obviously honey is quite sticky. And as you'll know, just from using honey out of a jar, it has a tendency to get places you don't want it. But I have to say, our experience was quite the opposite. We found it really, really easy to clean up. We found it easy to clean off of our hands, off of our utensils, off of the worktop. It actually cleaned up really, really easily. So that wasn't a concern that we will carry forward into next year. So that's something maybe to bear in mind if you've not done it before, that I just found with just a regular dishcloth, it cleaned up really, really easily. So it does get everywhere and it does create a cleanup job, but not nearly the dramatic, problematic cleanup job that you might be led to believe if you do a little bit of research online. Anyway, once we've got our honey, we got it home, the next thing we had to do was cut it out of the frame. So I just took my knife, cut all of the honeycomb out of the wooden frames that we used to support it, and all of those wooden frames we put in a recycling box. And of course, those wooden frames were still covered with little tiny bits of honey all over, and I needed to clean them off. So what I did was I basically put them outside. I put them at the far end of the garden, and the following day there must have been, I don't know how many hundred, but hundreds of wasps and a few bees, but predominantly wasps, just cleaning them all off. Now, of course, we weren't anywhere near our hive at this point. We were several miles away from our hive, so I didn't have to worry about this encouraging robbing of our hive. But it's something to be aware of if you're going to use this method. You wouldn't want to do it right outside your kitchen door. Also, throughout this process, we worked in the kitchen and we kept all the doors and windows shut for the same reason. We didn't want the house full of wasps, which it would have been, absolutely. It's phenomenal how reactive the wasps are to the smell of honey. So we've got all of our honeycomb cut out of the frames, and it was looking like a lot. We had quite a large plastic container full of it and two large glass bowls full of it. And the next thing we had to do was basically set up a filtering system. So what you're going to do, you're going to want to take a colander or something similar and line it with a cheesecloth. Now, I was a little bit nervous about this idea because honey just seemed so thick. I wasn't sure it was going to pass readily through the cheesecloth, but I needn't have been. As I'll explain shortly, it actually worked really, really well. So we got a colander lined with a cheesecloth. We placed that into another plastic bowl, an empty one. And then the next thing we did is we reached for a rolling pin. And we basically used it much like a pestle and mortar to just crush up all of the honeycomb. And what this does is it basically just breaks all of those little combs, all of those individual hexagonal capped spaces. It breaks them open and allows the honey to just flow downhill. So we broke all them up, and then with a big spoon, I placed as much as I could fit into the colander lined with a cheesecloth, and then we placed that on top of our boiler. Even though we're not using any heating at the moment, we still use hot water. So our little boiler in our back room next to the kitchen is the warmest room in the house. We put it in there because a slight increase in temperature, just the slight amount of warmth, increases the willingness of the honey to flow. And I was stunned by how quickly and easily the honey moved down through that cheesecloth. So we did that once. Then we removed the wax, which is what was left, with still a little bit of honey in, put that in another container, and then repeated the process. We moved all of our honeycomb through the colander with the cheesecloth, and then at the end we collected it the other side. Then what I did is I actually did the pestle and mortar trick with the rolling pin one more time over the whole lot, because there was still a little bit of honey left, and then we did it once more. And we collected roughly 20 pounds of honey, which is almost, what would that be? Almost 10 kilograms, I think. Now, I'm saying roughly because we didn't actually weigh it, and we've got various different sized jars that we collected it in. And so I've done it sort of by eye. I know some of the jars are a pound, will hold a pound of honey. So I've just done it roughly working out from there, and it's about 20 pounds. So it's a really good haul, a quite surprisingly high yield. And apparently it can be a bit less, even if you have a full super, depending on how thick the wax is. But like I say, that's what we got, and I'm just really, really thrilled with that. And that will easily meet the needs of my family for a year if we carry on just using honey as we did before. We definitely wouldn't use more than 20 jars of honey in a year regularly. However, the plan going forward, if we can produce more, will be that we'll start using honey more and more in replacement of sugar in lots of different things. We use lots of sugars in things like jam making, in things like kombucha making, when we bake cakes, in all sorts of other ways. So if we can start using honey, and it's not a like for like replacement, and there'll be a bit of trial and error doing this swap, but eventually it would be lovely if we never had to buy any sugar and we were creating enough honey to do that. And I know from my self-sufficiency challenge last year, even though we usually as a household don't use that much honey, during my self-sufficiency challenge last year, I went through several jars of honey just myself in 1 month. I probably went through 4 or 5 jars of honey. So it just goes to show, if you're trying to be completely self-sufficient, you would actually need a fair amount. But we've got our honey now, and the next step for us is to try and separate the wax or clean the beeswax so we can start using it. I mean, it's been a fantastic journey, because not only do you get the honey, which is the primary goal, the primary harvest, but you've also got this secondary harvest that we're going to be able to make candles with and lip balms and all sorts of things. I'm really, really excited to play around with that. And that's this whole other thing. And the idea of honey and beeswax in a homestead is so exciting, because they both will keep forever, or pretty close to it. So there's no rush for me to get round to doing these other things. That it will, I can do it at my own pace. And that's one of the best things about it for me, is so many of the things that we do when we're doing preserving or whatever else, it's very much time contingent. As in, if you're going to preserve your tomatoes, you have to do it when your tomatoes are in glut. That's it. You can't say, oh, that's great, I'll work out a way to preserve them in January when I'm not very busy. But you can, of course, do that with beeswax or anything you want to do with the honey. It's absolutely fantastic. And honey, of course, is its own preserver. It will last forever without you having to touch it. So it's an absolutely great thing to have on the shelf. So really, really excited. And looking back over the whole process, the best thing about it, from my personal point of view, is that my wife, Jackie, was completely immersed and involved in it all the way along. She didn't put a bee suit on, and she didn't come and harvest the actual frames with me. But from that point on, we were equally involved and invested in it, and we worked as a team, and it was just an absolute delight. It's lovely when you've got things like that, that both people are equally invested in and excited about and enjoying the process of. It just makes it that much more enjoyable. So that was a real, real treat. So that is our 2022 honey harvest. About 20 pounds, about 10 kilograms. I'm really, really happy, and I need to make sure next year that I don't miss the boat on catching some swarms. I need to really invest some time in that earlier in the year, because I didn't really do it this year. I didn't do it at all this year. And next year I want to have some more bees. So I need to follow the example set by Alan and Mike over at the Homesteading UK podcast, because they caught, I think, 10 or 11 swarms of bees this year. And they had all of their hives decimated. Decimated is one of those words. I'm going to be a bit of a pedant here. Decimated's a word that we use incorrectly. Decimated means reduced by 10%. It's what the Roman armies would do to the foreign armies after they'd captured them. They would kill 10% of them, and they would that's where we get the term decimated. So I don't mean decimated. Right, rant over. But they were extremely down on their numbers because they went into the winter with something like 11 and they came out with 1, and they managed to recoup all of those numbers over the spring through catching swarms. So I want to do that next year. Anyway, that's my plans for the future. That's my honey harvest. I hope you've enjoyed listening, and I hope it's encouraged you to consider going out and learning to be a beekeeper if you hadn't already thought about it. And if you have got bees, I hope that you've had a successful harvest this year, or that you're expecting one next year. Thanks for listening, everyone, and I will speak to you really soon. Cheers. This episode of the Self-Sufficient Hub podcast was brought to you by our patrons. You guys are awesome. If you'd like to support the show, there's lots of ways you can do it. The easiest of which is just to like and review it wherever you get our podcasts. You can also tell somebody about it, whether that's on social media or just face to face with a friend who you think might benefit from it. But however you support our podcast, we really, really appreciate it. If you'd like to become a patron, please consider doing so by going to patreon.com/self-sufficient hub. However you support the podcast, it's listeners like you that make all of this possible. Thank you ever so much for listening, and I'll speak to you really soon.